Good morning, everybody. If you didn't do so already, we have a bunch of handouts to take up front. There's a PowerPoint presentation, a quiz, but don't get nervous. We're not grading you. You're grading yourselves. And an article. We also have pens if you need them for the quiz. So we're going to get started and just take what you need. And more people will probably be joining us. That's okay. Okay,
you start. Am I still using the microphone?
I have it.
Okay, so you use it. I guess we'll use
it. Or should we? I don't want to.
Can you hear us without a microphone? Yes? Okay. So then we're not going to use a microphone. And if you need us to, just let us know. How's that?
Hard here.
So you prefer it. Okay, we can throw a microphone.
All right.
Yeah, and if you want to move closer, you can move closer.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for coming this morning. As you trickle in, you can come grab our handouts up here. You'll need one of each. And don't feel shy. You can come walk across our stage of sorts. But I'm going to get started by introducing myself. Hi, I'm Sari Kravitz. I work at Hillel Torah, and I'm the Dean of Students in the primary school. So I work with primarily first through fourth graders on behavior management and social-emotional learning.
I'm Tamara Shamas, and I am the Director of Professional Development at REACH, and I have the big honor of partnering with Sari and working together with her at Hillel Torah as well.
So Tamar and I came to be a couple because as I embarked on this role as Dean of Students, I needed some skills and strategies to help me better serve my population. And Tamar introduced me to collaborative problem solving, and I was trained and certified in collaborative problem solving, and that brought me to Tamar. She's my coach, and I bounce ideas off of her, and she's guided me along my journey. This will be my second year as Dean of Students, but my 12th year at the Hillel Torah. So, reflective listening to improve relationships. What we're about to talk to you about is not something new and profound. You're not going to leave here with like some grandiose new plan or idea. We're going to be talking about listening and why it's important to reflect on our skills as a listener and kind of come back to the basics, because good listening builds relationships. And our job as educators is to build relationships with kids. And when we build strong relationships with kids, we'll see their academic outcomes improve and their emotional and behavioral outcomes improve as well.
And I'll just add, I'm always humbled when I look around the room of people sitting here, because I'm standing before amazing educators who do an amazing job listening to their students. So just to reinforce what Sari said, while there might not be anything new today, I think if we can all commit to a certain practice that we might talk about and think about how we can do that better, and perhaps think about our students who might be the most challenging to spend the time listening to, and how can we really commit ourselves to doing a better job of listening both to them, and I will stress that this isn't just about listening to improve relationships with our kids. Listening improves all of our relationships. So who are people in our lives that we want to do a better job listening to? So our goals for today, this is stuck, so I have to stand here. Our goals for today, that we will learn about concrete listening strategies to become more effective listeners, and that we will understand ultimately how better listening can improve our relationships with our students, our colleagues, and anyone else in our lives. So we're going to start with talking about why listen, why is listening important. We're going to do some deep digging and think about what kind of listeners are we currently. And we'll end with some strategies for becoming better listeners. So we're going to start with a video. And as you watch this video, we want you to think of, have you ever had an experience like this in your life? Have you ever been listened to like this?
And because our sound isn't totally working, I have to hold the microphone to the computer. So excuse my back as I do this.
Hey, Murph.
Hey, Robin.
Heard you're having trouble with your computer.
Yeah, thanks for coming down.
Okay, so what seems to be the problem?
So every time I try to get online, it asks me for an admin password.
Sure.
I shouldn't need a password to get onto the internet.
Sure.
I should already have admin privileges on this computer. so...
You need admin privileges?
No, I already have admin privileges. I just need to get on the internet. I should need admin privileges.
Yeah, got it.
Sure. Are you actually not listening to me, or are you saying that you
Okay, you need to stop checking. What do you mean?
It seems like you're not listening, and you're just focusing on saying,
you got it, and everything, like, you're telling me,
why did you disagree with me a million times while I said it?
Okay, I'm just showing you that I'm listening to you. So you have a problem with your dog, is what I'm hearing?
No, you're clear.
So, let's start with what reaction that elicited. I saw some chuckling, but what are people's responses to that video? You can call out. Yes? Frustration. Being the one listened to, what does it feel like when you're listened to like that guy was listened to? So it's frustrating. What else?
I know.
Definitely happened before. So can anyone relate to this? Has anyone had an experience like this where someone was listening to them but they really didn't feel like they were actually being listened to? So we've all had that experience before. And you don't have to raise your hands for this. If you want to, you can be vulnerable. Do you think you've ever been in a situation where you've listened to somebody like that? Yeah, I think I did it yesterday to one of my kids, in all honesty. Because it's hard, and we get distracted, and there's a lot going on, and sometimes I'm So we can all relate to this experience, whether or not we were the listener or the one being listened to.
Next slide, please.
Alright, so why listen? Why do we take the time to focus on our listening? Why are you all here today? We think we listen, but rarely do we listen with real understanding and true empathy. Yet, listening of this very special kind is one of the most potent forces for change that I know, says Carl Rogers. Why do we listen? Because we want to change our students' lives, our colleagues' lives, other relationships in our lives. When we are good listeners, we are able to make that change. It might seem obvious to you, but take a few minutes to think about why listening might be important in your own life. Is there a relationship that you want to improve? Maybe it's a student, maybe it's a colleague, maybe it's a spouse, or a child in your home. Good listening skills contribute to building strong relationships, and so that is why we're here to talk about it, because our job is built on strong relationships. We can only make change when we have those relationships.
So as you think about listening and ground yourselves in committing to being better listeners, let's start by thinking about not those people in our lives, the ones that are behind us and yes and left, not really listening, but who in your life is a really good listener? Take a minute to think about it. Who in your life do you feel like really listens to you? And we'd love to take an example if someone is willing to share. Yeah.
Speak up so people can hear. My sister.
Okay.
I actually am the opposite. I'm the guy that listens. Yeah, that's me.
So what does your sister do that makes you feel that she's a good listener?
She asks a lot of questions. She really makes sure. So I want to make sure I understand you. So if I'm sorry for driving you absolutely crazy. What you said at many meetings, I really want to make sure I understand what you're saying. So after I'm being frustrated with her, and I actually explain that she verbal backtracks me, don't you really get it? And sometimes I feel like I don't have to explain her much because she really does get it. And she, like I said, she really wants to make sure she's not assuming she's really at the point. She really wants to make sure this is what you're saying. And even more, when she does understand me, she'll tell me, I don't understand.
So she's seeking to understand.
Yes.
I have a person in my life who's similar, who asks a lot of follow-up questions. Her name is Heather. She's a friend of mine. She asks a lot of really good follow-up questions, and then she checks in a couple days later, and a week later, and even a month later on some of the things that I've spoken to her about, and I'm like, oh my gosh, she was really paying attention to me. I told her I was going to be talking about her. She really makes me feel heard and understood, and our relationship has grown because of that.
So for people who appreciate numbers and data to prove our point that listening is important, this research comes from the business world, but I think that we can take any of these words and interchange them with school and with students. So active listening increases collaboration productivity by up to 25%. When we listen to our students, when we take time to understand what their concerns are, we can increase our collaborative efforts and their productivity. Engaged employees, or should I say engaged students, are 4.6 times more likely to feel empowered to perform their best work when they feel listened to. Active listening reduces misunderstandings by 40%. And finally, high-quality listening skills can contribute to a 16% higher student satisfaction rate. And I'll say teacher satisfaction rate. When you feel listened to by your colleagues, by your bosses, right? When you feel listened to by your students. So hopefully we model for our students what active listening looks like so that they can work on that skill as well. So now is the tough part. Just kidding, it's not tough. We have a quiz for you. If you didn't get it, we'll go around. Raise your hand if you need a quiz. Shouldn't receive the quiz. All you need to do is read the statement and score yourself. It's pretty self-explanatory. We're going to put 3 minutes on the clock for you to take this quiz to further think about what kind of listener are you. So we're going to honor quiet time for 3 minutes to take the quiz. Raise your hand if you need any assistance.
I was curious that you looked more usually in that one way. because sometimes you think of yourself as always doing something, but yeah. Never usually gave you a second thought to say that not always do you whatever you do.
Yeah, we probably don't do anything all the time. Maybe we're really good about it, but right, we try our best, usually do our best. Other thoughts in the back? Yeah. Can you speak up? Oh, that's a good one. Sometimes we're better at listening to some people and not others. Like if we're really, really good listeners at work all day long, but sometimes we come home and it's harder to listen to the people in our houses, even though they deserve just as much of our ear, right, as our students do. Other thoughts? Yes. To take notes when they're listening. Does anyone have? Right. Well, so in an active listening conversation, I think Rabbi Nisa has something to say.
I will take notes on meeting with somebody and it's serious. They first they know that it's serious, but I also have to make sure that I understand. And I tell them in advance, I'm not like writing recipes.
Yeah, and in my experience in collaborative problem solving, for those of you who are familiar, there is actually a document that we use to take notes on the conversation, and when we preface the conversation with, this is really important to me, and I really want to make sure that I understand what you're sharing with me, is it okay if I take some notes or I'm going to write some notes? 9 out of 10 times, the students are like, wow, they really care about what I'm going to say, and they appreciate when we take the time to write it down. But as I say with anything in general, know your audience. So if it's going to turn them off or they think you're going to use that against, you have to use it against them somehow, then you don't have to. But in general, taking notes about what someone is saying in the form of showing I'm committing this to memory and I really want to remember and understand what it is that you're sharing with me.
I think you can also match the level of professionalism that you're like having a conversation with. So if you're going to go be kid, I might take notes on my post-it note or a notepad so that somebody sees what will help me. If I'm meeting with a notes, I might take notes on my computer if I'm seeing more formal. But you can match the body language and the environment that you're in to make it work for you.
So we have more of these, and we also have a link at the bottom if it's something that you want to give older students, or if you're working on listening to some of the students, this could be something interesting to try. So now we're going to watch a clip. This is from an old show called Everybody Loves Raymond, and it's a clip of the parents listening to a problem that their daughter is having. And as we watch this clip, either jot down some notes or think to yourselves, what are some of the things that you notice about the listening that's being done here?
Why did you do this, Allie? This is terrible.
Oh, great.
This is Michael's giraffe. He's crying out. Why did you do this?
Cause
is not an answer.
I'm listening.
Ray.
It works. I just used all the worst kids in the neighborhood.
Look at this. Look what she did.
Try it.
But Ray.
Okay, what do I need to do?
Okay. Allie, let's talk about what you did.
I don't want to talk.
Are you feeling angry?
Reflect back.
You're angry.
Yes.
Okay. But it's not okay to rip up toys when we're angry.
I'm judgmental.
You are angry because...
Because it used to be your toy.
Yes.
I see. You think that mommy and daddy pay too much attention to Michael and Jeff.
Right, okay, I was handling this.
They get everything.
Right, and you're upset because we gave you your old giraffe.
I still liked it.
But you weren't playing with it.
But that doesn't matter, though, because it was still yours. And you're mad because we gave it to Michael without asking you, right?
Right.
Well, mommy, daddy made a mistake, and everybody makes mistakes, right, mommy?
Yes.
You feel better now, Allie?
Yes. Can I have the giraffe?
Well, it's broken, honey.
I know. I want to try to fix it for Michael.
Also. Yeah.
So what did we notice about Ray's listening? What did he do differently than his wife? Was this not on the whole time?
Maybe not, but I think
you guys heard it okay?
No.
No? Yes? No? It's hard to be an active listener when you can't hear what you're listening to. So you didn't even actually have to hear exactly what Ray was saying to pick up on some of the things that he was doing that were active listening. Yeah. Yeah, he squatted down where his wife was sitting in the chair and they were at different levels where he got down on her level to match her
standing first. She started when he came out.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to say what you said louder for the people in the front. She came with an agenda, right? She was about to lay into the daughter for what she did wrong instead of seeking to understand before needing to be understood, which is something we're going to talk about in a moment. Mara, anything else you want to add?
No, I mean, we have a slide with some of the things that we noticed. He got on her level to match her language, he matched her tone, he reflected that, what he was hearing, and put language to what she was feeling, right, your feeling, making statements in questioning ways, not judgmental ways, checking for understanding, having a neutral stance. And it takes practice and awareness. As you saw, the mother was a little bit more perturbed, a little bit more frustrated, wanted to get to the point, wanted to tell her daughter what she was doing wrong, and was kind of like rolling her eyes at this like reflective listening stuff. And Raymond was all too happy to prove to her that it worked very well. But it takes practice, and it takes awareness, and it takes patience, and it takes the four-letter word that everybody is thinking of is time. And sometimes we feel like, how do we have time? We have so many students in our classroom, so many things going on, and doing that really good listening does take time. I would say you go slow to go fast, and when you become good at it, it takes less time, but it is something that takes time, for sure. So now let's talk about strategies. And again, like we said, there is nothing, I mean, if there's something new here, I'm so glad. But I guess these are things that everybody is already aware of, but how can we think of becoming better at some of these things? For which strategies are we really good at, and which ones do we need to work on? So when we listen, our goals are to be reflective, right? To show the student or the person that we're talking to, that we're really listening. Often in a conversation, we also want to gather information to better understand the other person's perspective, the other person's feelings. And we want to communicate clearly. We want to communicate that we are listening. How do you know in a conversation with someone that they're actually listening to you? And sometimes it's the words they use, and sometimes it's a lot of other things that show that they're listening. So let's talk about reflection. Oftentimes with students, having a one-on-one conversation with a teacher is not necessarily something that they're interested in, right? They might be worried that they're going to get in trouble, or they might say, like, I'd rather be doing something with my friends, and they might not want to talk. So how can we provide reassurance? What are ways that we can let our students know that this is a safe space, that you don't have to be worried about this conversation, that I'm here for you, and that I want to listen? So does anybody have their, like, go-to reassurance statements that they make when trying to talk to a student who might not be interested in talking to them? Yes?
A lot of times I'll say, hey, I need to talk to you, and I don't worry. You're not in trouble. I just want to have a conversation. I'm all here to help you.
So being very transparent about what the goals for that conversation are. Anyone else?
Actually, give fidgets.
Give fidgets?
So they know it's chilled then.
So that it's chilled, right? And sometimes that's a really important point. Sometimes, like, those, like, sorry to use an example, but like sitting right here and talking to you directly with eye contact, that can feel really overwhelming for certain kids. So maybe you're taking a walk, or maybe you're playing a game of Uno, depending on the context, depending on your time. But doing something else while having that conversation can lower that stress level as well. Monique, did you have an answer?
I was
going to
say, with the younger kids I work with, sometimes I put myself in a position of, I'm really needing help, but I'm hoping you can help me, keep me mindful or strong.
Right, so making them the helper. And I want to be aware of the fact that we have people in this room who teach little ones and ones who teach big ones. So what we say or do is going to defer depending on the age that we're working with. I think Rachel.
I like to offer them a choice of where they want to sit. Like, do you want to sit in the hall? Do you want to sit in the chair? Do you want to sit in the rug? So they
conversation even though they're...
Choice is a big one. I always talk about choice because it's one of the three things that increase internal motivation. That's a side point. So choice and autonomy are very important. Yes. Right. So say I want to ask you something or I want to show you something. One of my favorite go-to lines, especially if it's a more high-stakes conversation about something that might have happened, I say, I bet you have a really good reason why. Right, and we're going to get to this later, but when we listen and really listen, it doesn't necessarily mean that we are agreeing or disagreeing, right? We're just listening. And from the student's perspective, they have good reasons for whatever they're thinking or feeling. And sometimes when we say that, we bring down that, you know, nervousness feeling. We want to use reflection, but we also don't want to parrot. So if a student comes to us and said, I hate school, it's so bad, I never want to come to school again. We're not going to repeat back to them, you hate school, school is so bad, you never want to come to school again, right? Because then they'll just feel like, why are you repeating exactly what I said? But how can we paraphrase what they're saying in our own words? And how can we find the emotions and label them, right? So if a student comes to us and says, I hate school, school's so bad, I never want to come back again, what's behind that? What are they really saying? I'm frustrated, it's hard, right? So I might say back then, wow, sounds like you've got some really strong feeling that something about school is really hard. I want to hear more about that, right? And sometimes it's not that extreme, but trying to take what the student is giving us or take what the person that we're talking to is giving to us and then coming back with some paraphrasing and some labeling of, it sounds like you are feeling this way or that way. When we gather information, right, of course we want to ask questions, but we want to, we don't want to grill, right? We don't want to be these, like, drill sergeants who are, like, drilling down and asking a million questions one right after the other, because that can feel really overwhelming, too. Turning it back to you, what are some tools that you have for gathering information from a student without just, like, grilling them with a million questions in class? So coming with a stance of curiosity and being open is amazing and also super important because especially for our most challenging students, it's triggering, let's be honest. It's triggering and it's hard to have conversations when we're feeling frustrated too. And if we can go into the conversation, what we like to say is curious and not furious, right? Really trying to be open to understanding another perspective by asking questions, but balancing the asking without the grilling. And for younger kids, sometimes we'll play 20 questions or we'll play hot or cold, right, to try to get more information from them. You know, you have some kids who are going to be more than happy to sit with you and give you a whole regula for a very long time, and you have to contain them. And you have other students who are barely going to give you a word. So, again, knowing your audience and how to elicit information from them. And the last one is the communication. And the communication doesn't have to be what that guy in the first video did. That actually turns us off and doesn't make us feel like someone is doing a very good job listening to us. But how can we use both our verbals and nonverbals to communicate that we're listening? So what are things that you do to show the people that you listen to well that you're listening to? What are things that you already do?
I feel listened to, and I know people are listening to you because... You okay? Because as you're talking, I've seen people nod, and they're like going, oh, yeah. When at Hillel Torah, a sign to let your teacher know you were thinking the same thing is to make a Me Too sign in your brain. So, like, I know kids are paying attention when they give me a Me Too sign, or they're feeling something similar when they make a Me Too sign. You might have seen me do this earlier. It's now part of, like, my gesturing, and I do it with adults, too. So to let someone know with your gestures and your nods.
Right. So the nodding, the mm-hmms, but not as many times as he gave them mm-hmms. The getting on, the matching, we call it matching rapport. So if the student is coming to talk to me and they're kind of like slumped back and whatever, me standing over them is probably not going to be the best way to have that conversation. Maybe I'll sit down and take a little bit more of a relaxed stance so that we're matching our tone and our rapport. And there's very interesting research that says that in a conversation, well, I'm going to ask you how much you think. What percentage of communication do you think is communicated verbally versus non-verbally? Like, which do you think actually communicates more to a student or to a person when you're listening to them? Is it what you say, how you look, and how you're acting?
Non-verbal.
Non-verbal. 65% non-verbal, right? So as much as we are there with them in the conversation and it's important that we're using the right words, actually how we look and what we don't say is even more important for that conversation, which just immediately reminds me of home, where we're distracted and there's things going on and someone might be talking to us and we might be doing something on our phone at the same time, right? Anyone ever have an experience where, we'll assume it's them and not you, where you're trying to talk to somebody and they're like, I'm listening, and they're doing something on their phone and you're like, I do not feel listened to right now, right? As much as you think, you might be hearing the words that I'm saying, but I don't feel listened to, right? So just how can we communicate without our words to someone that we are actually listening to them? And I find sometimes my best conversations with my kids are in the car, right? Anyone have really good conversations with someone in the car? Why is that? Why? Oh, you're trapped. I never thought of that.
I mean, they can't get away.
They can't get away. What else is
it?
Yeah. It's chill. What else? Yeah. You're not face-to-face. Now, I'm not suggesting that we take car rides with our students because I know that that's not possible, but how can we recreate a setting where it's more chill, right? Where we might not be looking face-to-face. And that goes back to the idea of what else can we be doing. There's actually research that shows that when people are engaging in motions that are repetitive, right, like sewing, crocheting, playing a game like Uno, shooting baskets, taking a walk, right, movements that are repetitive, it actually helps the brain engage more in difficult conversations. So that's an interesting tidbit when it comes to doing things like this.
So this is my favorite slide of our whole presentation. These sentence stems or sentence starters are ones that I always have in front of me when I'm talking with students and I'm engaging in collaborative problem solving with students to help me make sure that I'm being the best active listener that I can be. And you can read through them, but Tamar and I are going to model how to do this. So Tamar is going to play the student, and I am going to play the active listener. And by what you need to know is that I am still learning too and practicing. So as I talk to Tamar, I'm going to be looking at this to help me be an active listener, and I'm going to do my best, but I'm just here learning along with you. I just believe that this is so important in my work, and I wanted to share it with everyone.
If it's okay, I'm going to make a game time switch, and I'm going to be the teacher.
Oh, okay.
Who's here on ATT Teachers Conference Day.
Okay.
So, Sari, we're walking, you know, we're schmoozing in between the periods. I'm just feeling frustrated because it's nice to be here and it's nice to see everybody, but let's be honest, I have so much going on at home. My kids are all up from school. Like, it's really hard to engage today.
You sound so overwhelmed. Tell me more about that.
I am feeling overwhelmed because, the sessions are great and it's really nice, but, like, I just would really love
it. It sounds like you're really needing some more time to get things done outside of your responsibilities for school.
Yeah, I do. I really do. I'm really frustrated.
What I'm hearing is that you wish you could spend some time getting things done and learning for school. You understand why this is important, but yet it's still hard for you to manage these two things at once.
Yeah, I think you framed that really well.
You have a really good reason for feeling this way. You have a lot on your plate, and it's understandable.
Yep. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
So, now, obviously, we're not suggesting that you check someone off. Wait, let me look at my sheet to take a look. No. But just kind of hearing how Sari responded to my frustrations that perhaps some people here today are feeling, not saying everybody, what did you take from, like, that kind of listening? Yeah.
Validation. So I'm going to say more.
And I think that's a really important point because if some of you are watching this, you might be like, oh, I would not want someone to talk to me about that, right? And so, again, you have to know your audience, right? And you have to know how a person would like to be spoken to. And for any person, validation, empathy, active listening, however you do it, there's no one that's going to say they don't like it. It's just the way you do it that is important to know for the person that you're talking to. And I just want to say, Griffey said validation. Julie Gordon, Executive Director of Regency. Hello. we recently went to a conference with Dr. David Rothman, who wrote the book Thriving with Anxiety, which I highly recommend, a really fresh take on understanding anxiety and how it's actually our friend rather than something that works against us. And at the very end, he closed by talking about the power and importance of validation for any student, let alone one who's dealing with anxious feelings, and just validating people's feelings. And again, validating doesn't mean agreeing or disagreeing. Sarah could think that this is the most important day in the world, and how dare anybody ever talk about not wanting to be here, right? And yet, she validated my feelings. From my perspective, there was a lot going on, and it was hard for me to be here as to be focused today. And so he talked about the power of, and there's a lot of research attached to it, but the power of validation and how we work on validating for our students. So that's just something really important to keep in mind.
So this is the listening triangle, and this is what Tamar and I tried to model for you. So sticking with this triangle and cycling through it can give you a model or a foundation from which to listen. And I think, you know, kind of like he said, I'm sorry, I don't know your name.
Yeah, Chevy.
Kind of what Chevy said is that it can seem inauthentic if you use those scripted sentences, but if you make it your own and you bring your personality to it, I mean, I wouldn't use those sentences in such a methodical way with kids, right? But if I have them in my back pocket and I use it with my personality, my intonation, and my gesturing, and my eye contact, I think it all would mesh together well to be perceived as genuine. And when I'm listening to someone, I want to be genuinely listening. And part of that is being present and, like, being focused. And I think if you come into a conversation authentically ready to listen, you're going to give off that vibe as well.
What's our timing like?
We're good for one.
We're good for one? Okay. So,
we wanted to give you an opportunity to either, should we do it in small groups or have someone come up?
Let's do a big one.
Okay, we're going to do a big one. We'd love two people to come up here and model bravely what this might look like. So a teacher is frustrated with a parent for not replying to phone calls or emails after a child did not hand in homework for 3 weeks. Teacher goes to colleague for advice. We'd love someone to play the teacher who's frustrated and someone to play the listening colleague. Any brave takers?
We can help you out, the audience. Say, oh, Amy, thank you.
Come on up, Amy.
And we specifically chose one that's adult to adult because we want really to practice using this with the adults in our lives too, and sometimes it could be even trickier. Oh, go away.
Are you going to be the teacher or the listener?
I don't know. Grab it away. Decide.
You're the teacher, so.
I'm the teacher? Who's frustrated?
All right, I'll be the teacher.
All right, you're the teacher. You're the listener.
I'm the listener.
All right, loud.
How are you doing, by the way?
Just terrible.
What's going on?
I sent this parent an email so many times, and they just don't chat.
Oh, that is with you too.
It's very frustrating. I can't deal with it anymore.
So, what's your concern?
Well, child's not doing their homework. He's not performing his work. He's failing. And I can't communicate with the parent. I want the parent to be on board so the child will do better.
Right. So you feel like he's not reaching his potential. Sorry, I did that wrong. Hold on. Do you feel like the kid's reaching his potential?
No.
Oh, that is hard.
Yeah, it's very hard.
Because you as a teacher, you really want him to reach his potential.
I do, I try.
Thank you.
Yep.
Make it look natural.
Thank you.
What I'm hearing is that you're frustrated and you really want to help this kid.
Yes, I'm very frustrated. It was apparent in my voice.
It's very apparent in your voice.
That's what I'm talking about.
So, how can I help you get in touch with this parent?
I don't know. That's why I'm coming to you.
Scene.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much.
As you can see,
you're going to do another one.
We actually talk together, so.
I can tell you do this.
You guys have a good rapport, right? If you can be real honest with each other. But you can see when you're.
Active listening takes practice. Even Amy was CPS certified. And
are you saying that?
No, no, no. But it takes practice, and that's hard to not be judgmental when you're talking with a kid. It might not be reasonable, but it's our job to give them the space to be understood.
And I want to say something else. I think anyone in their life that's like a problem solver expertise, and like all they want to do is solve your problems.
Oh.
I feel like I
did that.
So very often, yeah, right, especially in situations where, like, we really actually need to solve the problem and we need to figure out what to do about it, like, sometimes we want help solving our problems, and sometimes we just want to feel hurt, right? And sometimes I might say to somebody, this sounds like really important, like a big deal, do you want to just talk about it first, or, like, are you looking for solutions? Now, again, I might shift that language if it comes to a student, but in that situation, I think first and foremost we need to listen, right? But maybe Rabbi Goldberg really wanted a solution and he came to Amy because, you know, Amy's had this experience before and, like, topless, how can you help me? Like, just tell me what to do, right? So if we use too much of it where the person's like, I just want a solution, stop listening to me. Again, if there's no, you don't know. You have to know your audience and just do that balance. But we should always start with trying to understand before going into problem solving, because everyone has had the experience of someone who really hasn't listened and just tried to problem solving, and that's not helpful. Yeah.
I thought
about
you mentioned before,
yeah. That's a really good question. Yeah, I'll repeat the question. So if I understood, please let me know if my reflection is understanding your question. What do you do in a situation where you have a student who is nonstop talking, right, and just kind of going on, and
or
anybody, and show them that you're listening without making them feel like they're being interrupted?
Right.
Is that the question?
You want to try to get to the heart of the matter, and they're going off on everything.
Right.
Or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'll put it back to the audience. What have you done in situations where you have someone who's not, like, just really talking a lot, but you also, like, want to insert to A, show that you're listening, to be able to ask questions, to reflect? What do you do in those types of situations without making the person feel like you're interrupting them? Yes?
It depends on the person. Like, especially if I know someone's not forthcoming, I actually stay very quiet. And I make eye contact with them and everything because they need to stay. In my mind, they're okay right now. I let them talk, and when they're finished, and I'll say, okay, you know, I didn't interrupt you because I felt like it was very important that you needed to say something. If this is someone who just struggles, if they ramble on, they know that about themselves, I would say, okay, can I interrupt you? And they're like, oh, totally, I'm like,
yeah,
like rambling on.
Yeah.
It really depends on the person.
I just want to say, pause for a second before you continue. I want to make sure I'm understanding.
Yeah. Usually, if it's a kid and they're really engaged, I'll be like, one second, I have a question, like, you know, do something to let them know that I want to actually participate. I have a funny story about that. When I first learned about active listening skills, the trainer had to do a simulation where he said you choose a partner, and then one person is the listener and one person is doing the talking, and the listener has to stay quiet completely for 2 minutes to listen, and it happens to be this conference that I was at on Derek Chavez far, far away, and I had to get home and I was like, what should I talk to this person to about for 2 minutes? So I ended up talking to this non-Jewish person about my Shabbos preparations and a plaza and toilet paper, and he probably thought I was crazy. But I needed something to talk about for 2 minutes, so that's what I spoke about. But after that 2 minutes, usually, and I've done this a lot, we just don't have time today, the feedback is usually, it feels strange to just sit for 2 minutes without doing anything to show the person that we're engaged in listening. It's also interesting to sit and listen without the intent to reply. How often are we listening and waiting for that moment where we can insert our opinion, or here's what we think, or this is why this is wrong, right? And just listening for the sake of listening is a skill. What's that? Right. There's hearing, right? You can actually hear the word that someone is telling us, and then there's actually listening with the intent of fully trying to understand what somebody else is saying to us. See, this is why I talk about listening for an hour. We all know about listening, but when we really dig down and think about it, it's deeper, right, than just the hearing and the listening. Do we have time for one more? Let's do another quick one.
Okay. So our next option for performance. A student is frustrated with a teacher because he thinks the demands of the class are overwhelming. We have anyone who's experienced this and wants to come up and perform.
I
awesome.
Do you want to? I just wanted to say something about it.
I just had
something last week where a student was sitting in front of me in my office. I'm a resource director, but she was sitting in front of me at high school. She was talking about a lot of the class, and then about one class, she said, "I hate my teacher." Now, I was just thinking about what you guys said about judgment, because like it's so easy to just say like, "Oh, that's pretty strong for a ninth grader." Like it wasn't a second grader. I hate my teacher, and I remember at the moment thinking like, "This is a student we've been trying to like get to, like actually hear what she thinks." So I was just like, "Yeah, you know, that's not easy." And we talked about like the teacher style a little bit and how it wasn't working well for her. But like it just really came into play the act of listening, because I have to be really careful about the class and in charge of like, "Is she really teaching out? Is your teacher?" No, that's not for now. Like she just needed that validation.
Active listening is a really good regulating tool, right? When you have students who are dysregulated, who are kind of spiraling out in different ways, and for some kids, that looks like the crying, the tantruming, and the kind of extroverted behaviors. For some kids, they implode instead of explode, and they go into themselves, and they shut down. And listening is a really good regulating tool. It just happened to me this weekend, my little one, 3 years old, but just to show how it works, started crying about something. I had no idea what it was, and I took him aside, and it said, "It looks like you're really upset about something. You are really sad about something, right? I'm doing more of you are feeling. I think you're upset about something." That stopped the tears and helped him calm down to the point where he was then able to tell me what he was upset about. So seeing a student on the floor or a student did something that seemed really inappropriate or not okay, of course, and we're not doing collaborative problem solving here, but we need to respond, all very important, and you seem really upset. Something is really going on. It's really bothering you. You are feeling is really helpful in resonating. We went off on a tangent. Okay, anyways, back to this. Who wants to try? Anybody willing to try? The student?
Yeah.
Okay, do you mind coming up? So easy part to play a frustrated student. We all know what that looks like. Anybody willing to try to play the teacher? If not, we will do it, but someone wants to practice.
You'll do it?
Yay! Thank you, Rachel. Okay, so Rivka, you guys can choose the age. So what age students are you? Sixth grade boy,
tough
frustrated
one.
Because he thinks that the teacher's demands are overwhelming. Okay, and Rachel, you're the teacher.
Okay.
So you are, and that's sometimes a hard conversation to be an active listener in, where the person talking is annoying and upset. So this is a good one. Go for it.
I hate this assignment. I hate my life. Everybody hates me. I know you hate me, and I hate you.
Sounds like you're feeling really frustrated about something.
I hate school. I can't stand it. I'm not doing any of this. And it's too easy. It shouldn't be in this class.
What I'm hearing is that this assignment does not feel right for you. How can I help you feel better about the assignment?
I'm not doing it home either. I'm not doing it home.
You seem to be saying you really don't want to be doing this assignment. Can we think of another way? Do you want to type instead of handwriting it?
I don't
like writing. Does anybody want to help?
This is great. This is hard.
Just real lines.
Yeah. This is short.
I love that.
That's a good one.
I'm going to add that to our list.
Yeah, that's a really good one. Can I interject?
Yeah.
I might ask some curiosity questions. So something about this assignment you really don't like. Tell me more about it. What about it don't you like?
I don't like vocabulary. I don't like writing paragraphs about it. It's just annoying. It's too much. I like reading, but I just don't like writing.
So it sounds like all the aspects of writing are really challenging for you.
I just don't want to do it.
I hear you. Sometimes writing is hard for me too. I'd love to hear your ideas, and I could start you off with writing a little bit for you, and then we can see how that goes.
Fine, we can do theater.
Nice. See.
We know all conversations don't necessarily end that, but for the sake of time, thank you, Rivka, and thank you, Rachel. in the last few minutes that we have together, questions, thoughts, comments, real life stories about how really taking the time to actively listen has shaped and changed conversations for you. Rumi?
What do you do in the case where the student is not going to open up his documents, and there's clearly no signs that there's no more about it, but there is a time component. So how do you actively listen to
that? How do you actively listen when a student isn't opening up and time is of the essence and there's not a lot of it? Yes.